Well, let me say this. There's a whole sociological literature on this, and I don't know if you've ever had Dr. Roger Yates as one of your guests. He's a sociologist. He teaches both at University of Wales at Bangor and at University College in Dublin. But he's a terrific guy. He's a sociologist, and he can speak to this in greater detail and with greater expertise than I can. But I can tell you this. It is a well-known sociological phenomenon that the meat people who had problems last year, let's be clear on something, the economic problems they had last year were not related to HSUS. They had problems related to all sorts of things, all sorts of issues, all sorts of economic issues that had nothing to do with HSUS. So let's take that issue and put it aside. I am familiar with the comments that were made about we've got to be careful about HSUS. Let me say this. It is common for an industry like the meat industry to focus on the moderate critic, the one that they can really work with, and demonize that person, because that way you've now set that person's demands up as the radical demand.
Right.
Okay? And that's exactly, this doesn't happen just in with animals. This happens, I mean, this is a phenomenon that Roger can speak to. But what you do is you set up HSUS, which is the moderate organization, and I want to talk about this, because it's a very, very important point for people to understand. You set up HSUS as the moderate organization, and they're the ones that you can really do the deal with, that you can do your deals with. You can work with them. So you set them up as the opponent so that actually you can show how you can make success. You can show your members and the public that you can work with the people who are making the supposedly threatening demands. Let's be clear. What is HSUS going after? They're going after things like the gestation crate. They're going after the veal crate. They're going after the battery cage. They're going after stunning as a method of killing poultry. Now, these are all things that have already been identified in various agricultural economics journals as economically vulnerable because there are questions about their efficiency. If you were starting a poultry slaughtering operation tomorrow and you didn't use controlled atmosphere killing or controlled atmosphere stunning, you would be an economic idiot, because it is much more economically efficient to use controlled atmosphere killing or controlled atmosphere stunning. So there are people, obviously, who have capital investments they would have to make, but the studies show that once you amortize your capital expense in switching from the stunning equipment to the controlled atmosphere killing equipment, your profitability increases. There are studies that show that if you use electronic sow feeding rather than the gestation crate, sow productivity increases. There are studies that show if you give veal calves slightly more space, the veterinary costs go down dramatically. And there are also studies that show that if you go from a conventional battery cage to cage-free, it's a de minimis cost. A lot of people, and we're talking about a 1 to 3 cent increase in terms of producing the egg. Now, one of two things happens. I mean, first of all, that can be passed along to the consumer. The consumer thinks the consumer is getting a healthier product because that's how these things are often promoted. And to the extent that the demand for the lower welfare product exists, that demand will be met because the markets can't keep the lower demand product out. I mean, they're seeing this in Britain, to the extent that Britain has increased some animal welfare standards, to the extent that the demand is there for the lower welfare product, the stuff's just being imported from Germany or from France or from Poland or from one of the other countries. So I think we have to be very, very careful. The things that HSUS is going after are the low-hanging fruit that are already identified by agricultural economists as economically inefficient. That's point number one. Point number two, it is very common as a sociological matter for an industry like the meat industry to focus on HSUS and say, oh, they're the people we really got to work with, because they know those are the people they can work with. So it ends up being a dance, you know, where industry resists, and then, you know, the animal people do all sorts of fundraising and raise billions of dollars, and they go back and forth and back and forth, and then eventually industry gives in because they've got they don't really lose anything by giving in. They get praised by HSUS that then says these people really care about the welfare of animals. You saw it happen in Canada with Kentucky Fried Chicken and the PETA business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you get Kentucky Fried Chicken says, we care about animal welfare, and they have a kumbaya moment with PETA. PETA says, yes, KFC cares about animal welfare. The animal people win. They do more fundraising. Industry wins because it portrays itself as concerned about animal welfare. It's a win-win situation. Only the animals lose.
Gary, I want to, I don't want to, but I need to take a very short 15-second break to play a station ID. And then when we come back, I'd really like to speak with you about the latest internet campaign that is going on in the abolitionist animal rights world. The world is vegan if you want it, if you'd like to stick around for 15 seconds.
Okay.
Thanks. We will be right back on Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. Welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. We are speaking today with Gary Francione about the state of the abolitionist animal rights movement. And before the break, we were speaking a little bit about the fallacies of industry and large animal rights organizations doing this sort of strange dance that seemingly never ends together, fighting each other and then praising each other, being scared of each other, et cetera, ad infinitum. But now I want to turn the conversation a little bit towards a very, very different campaign than a campaign that might be run by HSUS or by a group like PETA, and that is The World is Vegan If You Want It. Gary, can you tell us a little bit about The World is Vegan If You Want It campaign? How did it actually start?
Well, it started because I was getting ready to go to university, and I was shaving. And I was thinking, you know, it was 40 years ago, it was around Christmas time, it was 40 years mm-hmm. ago, that I and a bunch of my friends got in a train and went in from Jersey to Times Square because John and Yoko, this was at the time of the height of the Vietnam War, and John and Yoko had put up this billboard,
mm-hmm.
"War is over if you want it." And there were hundreds, maybe thousands of people in Times Square. We were all looking at this thing because we realized what a profound message it was, you know, that it was a statement about the people having the power to end the war, that the war's over if you want it. Don't look to the politicians. They profit from war. Don't look to the corporate interests which support the politician. These people make money off of war. If you wait for them to end it, it doesn't end. It only ends if we want it to end. And so I was thinking about that because that was something that really, you know, that impacted me when I was a kid, you know, and impacted all of us. And so I thought, why not convey the same? Because part of the problem with the animal movement is people think they can't do it. It's got to be done by somebody else for them. You know, they need leaders. They need this organization. They need this leader who's going to do something. And so I thought, this is exactly, you know, the message that needs to be conveyed is exactly the message that John and Yoko conveyed to us in 1969. And that is, you want it, it's yours. You can have a different world if you want it. A simple truth, but a profound one. And so I thought, why not? The world is vegan if you want it. This is a choice that we make. And this is a choice that we can all make not to do. We can all choose not to be vegan, and we can educate. Because you know what? My bottom line is, most people, not everybody, but most people really do care about the issue. Have you ever met anybody who basically says, I don't really care, I don't think how we treat animals or how we use animals even raises the moral question? Yes, I've met some,
mm-hmm.
you've met some, but by and large, people do care about this issue, and they are educable. If you educate them clearly, and if you don't present a confused message, you really can educate people and educate people successfully. So what I wanted to do was just sort of get out this idea that you want the world to be vegan, that's what you want, you can have it. Stop looking to the organization. Stop looking to leaders. Become a leader yourself. The war is over if you want it. The world is vegan if you want it. Well, I wrote, you know, literally, I mean, so I finished shaving, and I sat down in front of the computer, and I wrote this blog essay. I got home that night, and my inbox, I had to call my provider because my inbox, I couldn't download stuff because I had so many email messages.
Mm.
People had already designed banners. We now have banners that are available on the website, www.abolitionistapproach.com or theworldisvegan.com. And there are banners that are available for you to download. And we've got the slogan that's available in, I don't know, 23, 25 languages. The only thing I'm asking people to do is not commercialize. I don't want people taking this stuff and putting it on paraphernalia that they sell and make a profit off of. That's not the point.
Which
the
people
point
have already started doing, actually.
Yes, unfortunately. One of the things we're looking into is whether or not we can find somebody who will just do it at their cost. And, you know, the producer can make whatever money the producer makes, but nobody else will make any money. And so that they'll be available at a lower cost. But in any event, I don't want this stuff commercialized. People who are doing it, who are commercializing it, that's not appropriate. People who are commercializing it and using my URL are conveying a false impression that I am approving that. And, you know, I don't like that. And remember, I am a lawyer. and that's not a good thing to do. People shouldn't be doing that. That's the wrong thing to do. But it's remarkable. And we're doing some other campaigns that I've been working on with various people like Vincent Kahane in Canada, mm-hmm. and Adam Conowitz here in the States. We're working on some other campaigns about stopping vegan bashing. You know, these people who say, well, if you're a vegan, you're an absolutist, or you're this or you're that. You know, getting rid of this VEG asterisk N, or stopping characterizing ourselves as veggie, or, you know, let's reclaim the word vegan. It ain't a bad word. Let's reclaim it. Let's use it. So there's some other things that we're working on. But you know what's really fascinating is I don't have an organization. It's just me. It's me and my students and other people who volunteer. We're not a charitable organization. And it's remarkable what you can do just by yourself if you have the will to do it, if you have the drive to do it, if you want to do it. And I want to say one final thing. One of the things that distresses me very, very much is there's no discussion in the movement about anything. And it's distressing because, you know, we were talking before about HSUS. I've invited Wayne Pestell to come to Rutgers University to debate these issues with me about whether welfare reform works. Mm-hmm. And so far, he hasn't shown up. Somebody tried to set up, Gary Steiner, who's a professor at Bucknell University, mm-hmm. tried to set up a debate involving Professor Steiner and myself, Peter Singer, and Professor Rollins from Colorado State University. And Peter Singer wanted a $10,000 fee that he was going to donate to an organization that he knows, by the way, I don't particularly have high regard for, but he wanted a $10,000 fee. Professor Rollins stated in front of his class that he wanted to debate me, and when I accepted his invitation, he backed down and said he had changed his mind. This is the problem. If you're going to have a social movement, then you need to have discussion and debate. But we don't really have a social movement. We have a charity. We have the organized mainstream movement, which is part business and part cult. And then we have the grassroots activists. And so the grassroots activists need to understand is we don't need the mainstream movement. They're not going to help us. They're only standing in our way. They're only making things worse. They all have vested interest in animal exploitation. They are all profiting in various ways from animal exploitation. So it is important that we understand that we can bypass these people now, and we can bypass these people. And if I can leave people with one thought today, don't look for leaders. Become a leader yourself. You don't need a large organization. Activism is not writing a check to somebody who's going to make things better. These organizations have more money than God. They've got hundreds of millions of dollars. If you add up the asset pool of the large animal organizations, it's in the billions. I mean, these organizations, some of them have hundreds of millions of dollars of assets. And so it's not a question of money. As a matter of fact, I think it's incredible. Mm-hmm. That there are, 300,000 non-human animals sitting on Petfinder this morning waiting for a home, and there are organizations that have hundreds of millions of dollars. When they have that sort of money, there should be no animals on Petfinder. Mm-hmm. If they really care about the suffering of animals, they could alleviate a hell of a lot of suffering, and they're not doing it. So we don't need them. They're businesses. They're businesses, and they demand cult-like obedience, and it's nonsense.
Gary,
we need to recognize each of us can be a leader. What we do need to do is we do need to educate ourselves so that when we are with people, we can make intelligent arguments so that we have answers when people say, well, what about plants? Or when people say, well, but, you know, don't animals eat each other. Or, yes, but aren't animals different from us? They have different sorts of minds. There are answers, logical, coherent, clear answers. You don't need a PhD in philosophy to formulate them or to understand them. That's what I've worked very, very hard over the years trying to do, is to make this information accessible to anybody who cares enough to want to learn it.
Gary, I want to, we have about 3 minutes left.
Okay.
And I really appreciated, actually, your last set of points, especially this idea that you don't need a leader to make the kinds of changes that you're talking about. You don't need someone to be the chairman of the board and to, you know, have a strict sort of policy that they pass down to you. And I think that that is a super, super important and valuable point for people to take home. I want to give you a chance in the last 3 minutes now to maybe respond to some of the criticism that I know that you've received and that other people who espouse abolitionism have received, in that, in essence, you are the de facto leader. I mean, the World is Vegan campaign, those banners lead back to your website, for example. And so I'm just wondering if maybe you can give your kind of some closing thoughts on how you see yourself in relationship to the abolitionist movement, if it is to be a sort of leaderless
kind of movement. I'm just a guy who thinks, who I think thinks clearly about some issues. I don't view myself a leader. I'm not a leader of any organization. I'm not involved in any organization. And my employer is the State University of New Jersey. I'm a law professor. When I talk about leaders and when I criticize the concept of leadership, I'm talking about the phenomenon that we have in the mainstream movement where you have these people who are leaders who declare things. They say, this is the truth, and anybody who disagrees with it is divisive. My view is, I am willing to debate and to argue with anybody. If you think I'm wrong about something, I want to hear why you think I'm wrong, and I'll discuss it with you. What I'm talking about is the Jim Jones-type leadership, the Koresh sort of leadership, the idea that if you question, you're divisive. And I want to make one thing clear. I know a lot of these folks personally. I know Wayne. I've known Wayne Pestell probably for as long as you've been alive. I know Ingrid Newkirk very well. I know Paul Shapiro. I know a lot of these folks. I'm not questioning their sincerity. I just believe they are sincerely wrong. And so my view is that, you know, the problem of leadership is when you start believing, when it's no longer a matter of reason. I make arguments. You can look at the arguments I make. If you think they're wrong, you can tell me what premises are wrong or how the premises don't relate to the conclusion. But I make arguments. I am public about my views. I am public about my position. My work is there for anybody to criticize. What I object to are these people who say, you have to follow animal welfare reform, and if you don't, you're going to hurt the animals. That's not an argument. That's a declaration of faith. That's more like religion. And so what I'm saying is, that's what I object to. And if people want to say, well, I'm the de facto leader of the abolitionist movement, I'm the guy who generates a lot of arguments, I'm by no means the only person. There are a lot of people who are into this. But I've been doing it for a long time. I mean, I've been doing this since basically 1989.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've been in the movement for 30 years, but I mean, I've been developing this theory for, you know, since 1989, basically. But I'm not asking anybody for faith. No faith is required. Leave your faith at the door. All I want is your reason. I want you to engage my ideas with reason. If you disagree with me, good. Tell me why you disagree with me. But don't just say that you have to support animal welfare reform, or you're divisive, or you're evil, or you're going to harm the animals, because that's leadership that is akin to blind faith. And that blind faith is driving everybody off the cliff.
Gary, we are now officially out of time, and I think that is just as good of a spot as any to end the program. I want to thank you, as always, for being so gracious with your time and for giving us a lot of food for thought.
It is always a pleasure for me to be on your program, and I say hello to all who are listening, including and particularly the wonderful people in Canada. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Gary. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That was Gary Francione, the Energizer Bunny. He keeps going and going, and he is just endless energy. The last time we spoke to him, I think he had told us that he had gone on a mostly raw food diet and was feeling more energy than ever before. So, Gary, if you're keeping up that raw food diet, maybe it's something I need to try and get some more energy myself. You were listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Coming up next is Dos Mundos. If you have any questions about this show or any of our other programs, do drop us a line, animalvoices@gmail.com. And if you'd like to download this show or any of our other past programs, do check out www.animalvoices.ca. Stay tuned for Dos Mundos.